It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 17th day of May, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tube. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between the Great Globe Round, and where if you pop in right now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. Who happen to be Squeaky and Claire across the pond. Good evening, Claire. And Anatole. And, Theo just popped out of the conversation, but Theo was there too, but he's not now. And all capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. And, just got a note from Ralphs. Come on, people, don't make me sick Lassie and Kayla on y'all. Please contribute. Thank you for that, Ralphs. It makes my life a little bit easier. And so many thanks for the challenge yesterday from John in Maryland. And to those of you who responded, I can happily announce that the fundraising goal is now down to, it's down to $400. A little cipher in there. Sorry for the delay. $400, and we'll be even for the week on this prayer meeting Wednesday. As the deacons, we're not gonna have a service this evening because it got terribly prayer meeting-y toward the end of the program, or in medias res for that matter yesterday. We'll forego that, but the little old blue-haired ladies and little old blue-haired men and little old blue-haired non-binary folks down in the Fellowship Hall kitchen still put together a lovely, lovely snack tray. Now there's chips and salsa and cheese dip and that seven-layer bean dip stuff. And I need the carbs, but sometimes, well, too many days are turning into cheat days, quite honestly, but I'll work on that tomorrow. And of course, if you're listening to the podcast, whatever time it is that you do that, and I'm sorry about Podbean last night. Some days the magic works and some days it doesn't. But if you're listening to the podcast, please, whatever platform you listen on, Podcast Republic, iHeartRadio even, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean itself, wherever you listen, like it, please, and subscribe to it, and leave a comment, and that helps build awareness of the existence of the program. And when they notice that more people are listening, well, more people get to see it and try it out, so... do please, yes, and every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so thank you ever so kindly to our 17th day of the month subscribers. And that means thank you ever so kindly to Laborman in New Mexico. And thank you to our dear friend at Women Standing. And Laborman, however, is our only subscriber for today. But thank you also to thank you to David out in Oregon with a note. Here's hoping you can pay your power bill, sending love. Yes, the power bill monkey is off my back for the time being. And so now it's onward to things like telephony and internet and, yeah. And we'll sweat that. Nice, right? Well, maybe even get ahead. Who knows? I don't know. The suggestion says Steve in New York. I got me one of them digital Knuten valves. I find the digital ones are better for uploading stuff, especially audio and video. They're not that much more expensive than the standard ones either. did you get yours at Knuten Valves R Us, Steve? Yeah. That's where I would go shopping for mine. Yeah. So it is Wednesday, but there were things I didn't get to yesterday that I wanted to get to today, and there's things for today that are of moment. And I'd say at the top of my list, I don't know about yours, but at the top of my list is something that happened in the Supreme Court today. It, rather a big deal, frankly. We've talked at some length over the past couple of weeks about these lawsuits that have been brought by blood-soaked gun humpers against the state of Illinois, and the city of Naperville because of the assault rifle bans that and their bans, you know, that they put forward, and high-capacity mags, things that this country desperately needs. Ralph's a Knuten valve is whatever you want it to be. It is often seen in the company of a flagellate. It interfaces with the flagellate, as a matter of fact. And it's it's an ancillary part of the entire whatchamacallit assembly. Anatole says, no, he got his at Walmart. Steve would not be caught in Walmart in any state of existence. So, let's just put that to rest. Oh, and by the way, I'm in a better mood. A, having the AEP extortion monkey off my back is a big part of it. But we saw the sun today. We're probably going to see it tomorrow and Friday. Probably going to rain on Saturday, and I have travel plans. Maybe. But we saw the sun today. And, in fact, I went out, and I think I got a couple of new freckles. Yay! And so it's... two-piece swimsuit radio this evening. Oh, yes, okay. Steve in New York says, Ralphs can go to the Valve City website. They have they have valves and what they're used for there, Valve City. Don't extend the bit too far. And, yeah, before I get back to the gun story, I had a note from... our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor, who got to the part of yesterday's podcast where I was discussing Ron Monkey Up DeClantis and his really weird fake laugh. And she said, yeah, listening to the pod now, the part about Ron DeSantis and his forced laughter, that's R-H-O-N-D-A, Santis, S-A-N-T-I-S, and his forced laughter, throwing his head back, I saw where somebody said, nothing in the world is that funny. Nothing. And I tend to agree with Joy, especially, and if you've seen the video by now, you know, It's gross. But upon further reflection, I thought, Joy said, nothing in the world is that funny. Nothing. One thing is, the first time that Scott in San Diego mentioned to me the monkey working a math problem with his little green visor and his little arm garters and his little pencil, yeah, talking, wetting the end of his pencil and his tongue, that was devastating. If you recall that individual evening, I was ruined for several minutes. Okay, Emilio, everybody's on my back today. Stop freckle signaling, Robin. Freckle signaling. Who knew it was a thing? I guess it is, though. It just felt good to have warm sun on my skin. It was glorious. Oh, Ralphs went to ValveCityInc.com. Wow, says Ralphs, so many valves. Oh, Steve, you're nothing but trouble, you know that? Honest to God, you'd shake hands with a mortician with a joy buzzer on your palm. In regard to Scott, Steve says, I gotta say, if anyone can say something that funny, it is indeed Scott. I'm inclined, you know, and we don't have prizes to give away. We pass out cowbells here and there, but and I don't want to single anybody out. But I think it would be appropriate to just go ahead and recognize that Scott in San Diego is the funniest person on this program. The number of times that he has destroyed me, just absolutely reset a program, I don't think I can count them. So here's your sign, Scott, as that, you know, meme goes. Okay, we're actually going, this is a political and social commentary program, and we're actually going to do some of that. I was talking about the gun litigation, and of course the gun humpers were out there because they went and filed an emergency petition because they were hoping to get a leg up on or maybe a jump, if you will, on winning the case outright after last year's Bruen decision, Bruen, that bloody nightmare that resulted from a, that was the result of a 6-3 decision, that the opinion of which was written by Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas. And we all know the right wing has developed a predilection for filing emergency petitions over everything. They're just running around with their little maggot heads on fire. And it's an emergency! They did it, you might recall. West Virginia Attorney General Pill-Pushing Patty Morrissey screamed, it's an emergency! Because one girl was going to play she was going to run cross-country, for God's sakes. And they went to the Supreme Court screaming, that's an emergency! And, Dave, that's interesting. Dave in the Blind yesterday was talking about some of the cast members of Hogan's Heroes. And it reminded me, a lot of them were Jewish, and making fun of the Nazis. And I just remember one particular episode where part of the gang's problem was that they had a non-English speaking German camp guard, a new guy. And the running gag was that they taught him to say emergency. It's just emergency. And for all my life, that word has always sort of resonated in my head because I could hear his voice. Emergency. And now, lo and behold, it's actual policy of various and sundry right-wing litigants before the Supreme Court, attorneys general and the lot. And you can, I just flashed on this vision of pill-pushing Patty Morrissey and these gun humpers running to the Supreme Court saying, emergency. Yeah, because a little trans girl is going to run cross-country in West Virginia. And the Supreme Court said, nah, it's not. And then today, of course, the blood-soaked gun humpers had run to the Supreme Court and, we can't buy no AR-15s in Illinois right now. Emergency. And lo and behold, will wonders never cease? Mirabile dictu. All 9 members of the Supreme Court of the United States told the blood-soaked gun humpers to fuck off into the sun. There were no dissents to the rejection of the emergency petition. Emergency. None. Not even. Now, the Bruin decision, as we mentioned last night with that one breaking news story, the Bruin decision is screwing up a lot of things. And that's entirely at Fappy and the other 5 monsters' doorstep. I really think we should deliver the bodies of people slaughtered in AR-15 massacres directly to Fappy and Ginny's doorstep. Stack them like cordwood. But the Bruin decision says that any gun bans have to be... Jesus, I hate this so much. They have to be consistent with the history and tradition of guns in America. Who's going to tell them guns weren't allowed in bars and saloons and whatnot? Because that's what the federal judge in New Jersey overturned in part yesterday, was a ban on taking your shooting iron into your local watering hole. Go figure. But today, the Supreme Court, with no dissents whatsoever, rejected the emergency appeal of the blood-soaked gun humpers. You know, the lawful gun owners. Which came as a bit of a surprise, I confess. To be fair, this is not a ruling on the merits. Because that will, the case hasn't even gone to, the appeal of the case hasn't even been heard in, what is it, the 7th Circuit, I believe? Yes? The 7th Circuit in Chicago said it will hear arguments on the issue, the constitutionality of the Illinois and Naperville laws late in June. And so they didn't see much of an emergency about it. So maybe it could be that the Supreme Court's just like, nah, not now. We're going to dump another barrel of blood on America and in our own damn good time. But the interesting thing about this is that generally injunctions are only granted when the court finds that there is a substantial likelihood that the plaintiffs will prevail at trial. So the fact that they did not jump out and enjoin these laws suggests, at the very least, that the Supreme Court sees it as an open question. So we take our little victories where we can find them. And that was a little precious life-saving victory. Who knows what child or mother-to-be in Illinois might live out their lives because some angry young white guy couldn't get his hands on an AR-15. There are real consequences. Oh, and Steve points out to me, conservative judges signal sympathy for anti-abortion plaintiffs in Mifepristone lawsuit via The Guardian. Biden administration attorney Sarah Harrington told the judges that the doctors and groups who brought the lawsuit did not have a right to sue because they had not proved they had been forced to treat anyone who took Mifepristone against their religious beliefs. All three judges seemed skeptical of that argument. Why? It just strikes me that what the FDA has done in making Mifepristone more available is you've made it much more likely that patients are going to go to emergency care or a medical clinic when one of these doctors is a member, said Judge Wilson, who was, of course, nominated by Nitwit Nero, a maggot judge. And yeah, guns and bars. Steve notes, when the Ohio General Assembly passed a law allowing guns and bars, Marty Brenneman characteristically quipped, "Guns and bars! What could go wrong?" I get it. And for, well, we have talked a little bit about how a week ago tonight we got a really nasty, vulgar, gross preview of what campaign 2024 is going to look like. And we're getting another hint today. CNN executives had a meeting today with advertisers, and they unveiled their primetime lineup for 2024, or in advance of it. Caitlin Collins, the woman who did a less than sterling job last week, has been sent another rung up the ladder. They gave Caitlin Collins their 9 p.m. primetime slot. CNN has selected Caitlin Collins to host a new weeknight show at 9 p.m., elevating her to one of the most coveted time slots in cable news a week after she moderated the contentious town hall with former President Donald J. Trump. That from the New York Times today. The new role for Ms. Collins was announced by CNN's chairman, Chris Licht, who should have been summarily fired today, just ahead of a presentation to advertisers in Midtown Manhattan hosted by Warner Brothers Discovery, CNN's parent company. The Times described it as Mr. Licht's latest attempt to revive his network's sagging ratings. On weeknights, CNN lags behind Fox News and MSNBC, and on Friday, 2 days after the Trump town hall, it even lost to Newsmax, a fledgling conservative network that's available in fewer homes. Newsmuck. And remember, Caitlin Collins just let him sit there and lie his paranoid, mendacious, adipose ass off. And over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, well, the Hannity job is being moved into testicle-toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson's slot. It's gonna be hard. It's gonna be hard to. Well, I never watch Fox. Who? Oh, Jesus, please, no. But to the extent that I watched CNN much at all, that ship has sailed and sunk. Gross. And this bears mentioning. Sometimes you almost feel like, I want to think that maybe the tide is turning a little bit. Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone, Foghorn Leghorn of Louisianistan, was involved in a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing today. And threw a bit of a hissy. The whining about the fact that people have learned the depth and breadth of the perfidy of the Republican majority on the Supreme Court. Whether it's real estate deals by Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch or real estate deals by Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas or, you know, the $500,000 vacation or the under-the-table money for ginsurrectionist. Well, John Kennedy, the aforementioned Senator Cornpone, was right upset.
The assault comes in waves. The current assault on the United States Supreme Court as an institution started on May 4th, 2020. I remember it like it was yesterday. It started on the steps of the United States Supreme Court. The Democratic leader of the United States Senate said, and I quote,
Churchill, he ain't.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch. I want to tell you, Kavanaugh. You have released the whirlwind, the Democratic leader of the United States Senate said, and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with...
I just may want to make an observation here. I wish Schumer had done better in what he said. I do. Because if you're gonna get all stentorian and oratorical about that, you want to get your quote right. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, you have sown the wind, and you will reap the whirlwind. That's the verse. That's the quote. And of course, every Republican from Dan to Beersheba has had kittens with crocheted tails over that quote. He was calling for them to be assassinated. Oh, shut up, Foghorn. Yeah, that happened a while back, too. Steve says, I removed CNN from my favorites, bookmarks, history, etc. I will not even look at the website anymore just to see what the headlines are. I really don't look at any U.S. news website. You get better U.S. news coverage from The Guardian, the CBC, Channel 4 in the U.K., etc. The BBC has been foxified. Oh, Lord. The damage that Joanne Rowling has done to the BBC by herself, by their fawning sycophancy for her hatred, is, it certainly lowered their estimation in a lot of eyes. But anyway, back to Foghorn Leghorn. Pick it up a bit, brother.
With these awful decisions. Now, we're supposedly here today to hear the latest chapter in the fairy tale of Supreme Court corruption.
Fairy tale $500,000 vacation, I guess.
As I implied, this is a continued effort to undermine a United States Supreme Court that isn't ruling the way that some of my Democratic colleagues want. And that's the perpetual political carousel that brings us here today. It makes me want to gag.
Really?
I thank the ranking member for his colorful remarks and turn to Chairman Durbin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to colorful. Senator Kennedy for holding this
nice shade, Sheldon.
Today. I want to thank Judge Wolf for his willingness to testify about the role the Judicial Conference Committee on Financial Disclosure plays or fails to play when it comes to overseeing Supreme Court justices' compliance with the Ethics in Government Act. I'd like to start by saying that Senator Kennedy, my friend, has identified May 4th, 2020, as the kickoff date for this so-called political exercise. I would like to show to my colleague and put in the record a copy of the letter which I sent, signed by Senator Leahy, Senator Whitehouse, and others, to Chief Justice John Roberts, dated February 13th, 2012. February 13th, 2012, 8 years before this date in 2020. And what were we asking or making inquiry on? We were asking about information on the code of ethics and the code of conduct and the ethical behavior of the Supreme Court justices, in particular one whose situation had come to light, who had been receiving some gifts of some sort, and his wife had been receiving some income which was not properly reported. So to say this all started in May 4th, 2020 is just plain wrong. I've got the letter here to prove it, and I ask consent to enter it into the record.
Ooh.
Let me go further and say that for more than a decade since sending this letter and before, I've been calling on Supreme Court justices to be held to this at a minimum, to the same ethical standards as every other federal judge. That's the outrage that precipitated the comments by the ranking member, the notion that the Supreme Court justices, all nine of them, would be held to the same ethical standards. As I mentioned, I started that in February 2012. I want to commend the chairman, Senator Whitehouse, who has really done yeoman's duty in pursuing this issue long before the current publication by ProPublica of information that brings us here today. I thank him for his leadership in that, and I think he is appropriately chairing this subcommittee on the courts at a moment in history when he's needed now more than ever. I again urge Chief Justice Roberts, after the recent ProPublica revelations about luxury vacations and travel given to the Supreme Court Justice by billionaire Harlan Crow, I invited the Chief Justice on behalf of the committee, Democrats in the committee, to testify on this issue. He declined. I'm sorry that he did. I then called on him to rescue the reputation of the court by simply taking action to respond to this well-documented outrage. For anyone, including my colleagues in the Senate on both sides of the aisle, to believe that this is normal, acceptable conduct for an elected official, Supreme Court Justice, Senator, to be receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of gifts and vacations, to have your mother's home purchased by an individual so she doesn't have to pay a mortgage any longer. The list just goes on and keeps moving on. And the American people don't understand this. As Judge Wolf, I read your statement this morning, and I'm not going to quote it because it may be some elements that you want to quote yourself in your opening statement. But what this court has to rely on is a confidence of the American people in the integrity of justices when they hand down decisions. If they hand down controversial decisions and the American people don't like them, they can at least say, well, that's the court. They go their own way. But if there is any question about the integrity and character of these justices, it really undermines the institution of the court. That's why I appealed directly to Chief Justice Roberts. This is the Roberts Court. This is his court in history. And what he chooses to do by way of ethics is going to be remembered for generations.
Durbin's not wrong. And for that matter, not that it matters, Sheldon Whitehouse is one of my favorite members of the United States Senate. Because I have a feeling that he probably gives old balls and strikes a case of the fantods every time his name is mentioned. And that's fine by me. But going back to the refusal of the emergency petition from the gun humpers, again, there were no dissents to that. There was no dissent to the idea that it's not an emergency, even from the guy who authored the Bruin decision, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas. And I find that telling. And I wonder if he has gone to ground a little bit. I wonder if they're maybe the Republicans on the court are perhaps considering the fact that they may have overreached. And that, I know it's not supposed to work that way. But there are a lot of things about the Supreme Court that aren't supposed to work the way they work. And it's hard not to at least wonder about it. You would think that if the Bruin decision is controlling, that the Supreme Court could have just put it all to bed by granting the emergency petition. They don't seem to have a lot of compunction relative to ethics. I can't help wondering. So that was, you know, that was one hissy being thrown by Jubilation T. Cornpone. Last week, he had another one. In a hearing, Senator Foghorn Leghorn questioned the administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration, Ann Milgram. And I will say again, the DEA probably needs to go AWAY. One of the least effective agencies in the entire federal government. I think we could probably do a better job interdicting things like fentanyl. By the way, it's fentanyl, not fentanyl. Sorry, that's one of those that's been on me like fire ants lately. F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L, fentanyl. And there's probably a chemical reason for that Y as opposed to O-L. Sorry, that was a digression. But Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone was going after Ann Milgram and along the way decided to slur the entire nation to our immediate south with whom we are supposed to have good and friendly relations, to wit, Mexico. You know, you can take the bigot out of Louisiana, but you can't... Nah, that doesn't work, does it? So what Jubilation T. Cornpone said last week was, without the people of America, Mexico, figuratively speaking, would be eating cat food out of a can and living in a tent behind an outback. What a living, breathing, walking, talking embarrassment John Kennedy is. I'm trying to resist the urge to do what I always do in these moments. Well, before the dirty, disease-bearing white Spanish landed in the New World, the culture of the Valley of Mexico was one of the most advanced on Earth. The cleanest, most populous city on the planet. It only took 500 years for it to become one of the dirtiest and most populous city on Earth. That was not the doing of the indigenous people. And it was white European colonizers who wrecked it, and of course the United States in after its founding, went a long way toward immiserating Mexico. Mexico got rid of slavery long before the United States did. That was kind of what the Alamo and the Mexican War were all about. Well, I guess when you're having a Senate hearing with the administrator of the DEA to talk about fentanyl crossing the Mexican border, and by the way, a whole lot more fentanyl comes in at the Port of Los Angeles, among other places, on container ships from China than crosses the Mexican border, just because facts, well, as old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan, once said, "It will, mommy, facts are stupid things." But the Mexican ambassador, one Esteban Moctezuma, watched the hearing and dropped a little note to Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone. And he said, "As I was listening, my initial reaction was to answer you in the same low, uninformed, and arrogant tone as the one you used. But it is always better to use your brain instead of your guts. So I recalled the vibrant relationship that exists between Mexico and the United States." I thought of the 33 million American tourists who last year visited Mexico, eager to learn about our culture. The $800 billion of trade between our two countries came to mind. And of course, the delicious Mexican food that most Americans consume in thousands of crowded restaurants. This is what you call a beatdown. "I remembered," he continued, "that most Americans are friends of Mexico and that 2 million Americans actually live in Mexico. To enlighten you, Louisiana greatly benefits from its relationship with Mexico. Last year, it exported to us $40 billion and bought $15 billion, with a surplus balance in favor of Louisiana of $25 billion. Furthermore, the jobs in Louisiana generated by all this trade support 70,000 families in that great state. I don't think the people of Louisiana feel represented by the vulgar and racist words you used." Mish Bansinko, in your august presence, "you are obliged to offer an apology to your citizens." Oh, God, this guy's good. "Not an apology to Mexico. You are obliged to offer an apology to your citizens because what you asserted is not worthy of the state of Louisiana, known for being a cultural melting pot. Given the moral standards expressed in your unfortunate statement, we do not expect any reconsideration from you at all." Whew. Dude. He's going to freeze to death in that shade. "However, speaking of those who actually live under a tent behind an outback in Louisiana, you owe them an apology indeed, since they don't live like this because they want to, but as a consequence of social, economic, and health problems that deserve to be considered. Those are issues that a senator should be focusing on. Nevertheless, in Mexico, we choose to nourish the image of Louisiana, which is admired in the world precisely because of its coexistence in diversity that can only be achieved with generosity, inclusion, and heart. When your racist and xenophobic insults were known in Mexico, people wondered, how can a Kennedy say that? Since the image of President John F. Kennedy in Mexico is a beacon that illuminates the path of freedom, democracy, and inclusion. He reflects the best of America, and his example continues to educate millions of people around the world about universal values. But it didn't take long to learn that John Neely Kennedy is not from the Kennedy family of Massachusetts." Jesus Christ! Mr. Senator, it is not through offenses and threats that constructive collaboration between allied nations such as the U.S. and Mexico can be achieved. I reiterate my willingness to dialogue objectively and respectfully about drug and arms trafficking, among other challenges that our nations must face together. Mexico is cooperating and is willing to cooperate always with our USA neighbor, friend, and ally, but also always with dignity, sovereignty, and veracity. Sincerely, Esteban Moctezuma, Ambassador. Wow. Louisiana would probably be better represented by him than by Jubilation T. Cornpone. You know, the vulgar racist. And I confess, I would kind of like to hear that letter read in that infuriated, rapid Mexican telenovela Spanish. But good on him. What a nasty, nasty man. Do I need to do that with a new name?
He's nasty. John Kennedy is nasty.
Oh, dear God, speaking of him, Nitwit Nero is taking a victory lap today. They just sent out a Trump 2024 email. I'm looking at it even as we speak. Trump allied...
Rhonda Sanctimonious, a culture of losing.
Headline from Forbes, Trump ally defeats DeSantis-backed candidate in Kentucky gubernatorial primary. From the Hill, DeSantis sees both endorsed candidates lose. The New York Times, DeSantis goes 0-2 on election night. NBC News, eyes on 2024, Tuesday wasn't DeSantis's night. Fox News, Jacksonville Democrat upsets DeSantis-backed candidate in mayoral race. Newsweek, full list of Ron DeSantis endorsements who have flopped. Yahoo News, DeSantis-backed candidates stumble in Tuesday's elections. Politico, Dems beat DeSantis-endorsed candidate in Florida's biggest city. Sarasota Herald Tribune, Republican loss in Jacksonville, a setback for DeSantis against Trump. Oh, he's the former guy, the psychopath, is giggling. You know, the proven sexual predator. But that's true. Monkey Up had backed that horrible woman in Kentucky who promised the voters of Kentucky that if they make her governor, that she will eliminate trans kids from Kentucky schools. Because, I mean, she did. And so Monkey Up is not having a great day. In fact, I'm trying to see where it was. He chickened out of some availabilities today because he was so butthurt, so humiliated, so embarrassed. Gosh, I hope it didn't hurt too little. Really? And since we've got Nitwit Nero for a moment, he's desperately trying to spin the John Durham nothing burger. He went on to his rickety wheels falling off social media putz form this morning and said, all caps, just turn the caps lock on and leave it on.
I was being framed by the FBI and the DOJ. Now it continues with the boxes hoax, the perfect phone call in Atlanta, the Manhattan DA, and the New York State AG scam. What a group. But I'll report to the DOJ in Washington. It's James Comey and the sleazebags all over again. They're playing election interference in 2024 through illegal law enforcement against Republicans, in particular your favorite president, me. These are cheating lowlifes, but we will win. Our country is going to hell.
I don't think the Adderall had kicked in yet. We will win. Our country is going to hell. And just before he put thumbs to touch screen, the word came out that one of his pettifoggers, Tim Parlatore, said, no, this has nothing to do with Trump's legal troubles. I've just decided I want to spend more time with my law license. Their family. Dog. I'm out. Or maybe, you know, the check didn't clear. Yeah. Oh, and since we had the story about Clanny Granny getting her D-I-V-O-R-C-E on yesterday's program, a little bit of a follow-up. You might recall that Lauren Bobblehead Boobert's soon-to-be ex-hubby was drinking a beer and refused service of the divorce petition and sick the dogs on the process server. Well, she may want a D-I-V-O-R-C-E, but she's still defending her hubby, who likes to whip it out in front of young girls, and was convicted of it. Well, the bobblehead took umbrage at the fact that the process server noted that he was drinking a tall glass of beer. He's probably celebrating and cleaning a gun. Well, Clanny Granny said, Jason, a man I spent half my life with, did not sign up to be in the public limelight, and he certainly did not agree to be falsely accused of things he didn't do. Jason doesn't sit around cleaning guns, and he certainly doesn't drink beer out of a glass just as much as he doesn't drink Bud Light. Our own home security footage shows he didn't sick dogs on the process server. The dogs were outside, and when the server pulled up, they never showed aggression toward him, nor did he appear afraid of them. My divorce is a private matter. Jason deserves his privacy, not slanderous stories. Maybe y'all can put it back together, hon. Or maybe, well, maybe not. Poor baby. Emilio says, I think Trump's handler changed to the generic Addersum just to save some money. What could possibly go wrong? Adderall, Addersum, ha. There we go. I mentioned fentanyl a couple of minutes ago. F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L, fentanyl. Cranston, Rhode Island. Jesus Christ. Hi, Charlene. A Republican city councilman in Cranston, Rhode Island, In fact, the chair of the local Republican Party got busted Monday because the local constabulary happened upon Matthew Riley, aged 41, first-term council member, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican council member. He's also a practicing lawyer, and of course, he's a youth soccer coach. Well, he was sitting in his car on Monday when the police happened by and just happened to notice that Matthew Riley, the aforementioned good God-fearing, etc., Republican, well, the police report says, the police found Riley around 11:30 a.m. in a parked SUV after a passerby told a patrolman that a man was possibly choking in a parking lot. Huh. The report continues and said he appeared to be sleeping or unconscious while having difficulty breathing, choking. I opened the door and had to shake him in order for him to wake up. At that point, I noticed that he had a glass pipe that's typically used to smoke crack cocaine from in his hand and a lighter. Matthew Riley, age 41, then told the police that, I was just sleeping. The cop then called an emergency, an EMT, ambulance. They evaluated and said, nah, he's not overdosing. We don't have to get the Narcan out. Because what he was doing is he was smoking a mixture of fentanyl and crack. Sort of a modern-day speedball. I guess Matthew Riley, age 41, is too young to remember what that did to John Belushi. Now, the DEA last year did seize enough fentanyl to kill every single American in the country, and probably some folks who aren't Americans, too. Probably the United States and Canada. But good God-fearing, upstanding Matthew Riley, etc., has resigned as a first-term city councilman in Cranston, Rhode Island. Mayor Kenneth Hopkins said, speaking to ABC 6,
"My hope is Matt will get whatever care and attention he needs for his own well-being."
You're 41, you're a youth soccer coach, you're a practicing lawyer, you've probably got the world by the tail, and, well, I guess for some people that all says, hey, you know what, I think I'll smoke some crack cocaine and fentanyl. What could possibly go wrong? As Emilio said a moment ago. And then, like I said, one dares to hope that there's a bit of a sea change taking place, that people are beginning to push back at these toxic morons. And yesterday, during a Homeland Security Committee on left-wing violence, Marge tried to get her back up at a witness. I think I mentioned this toward the end of the program. Amy Spitalnik, an expert who runs the Integrity First for America group, felt found some of Marge's antics, shall we say, risible.
Ms. Green for 5 minutes of questioning, second round.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just while we've been sitting in this committee room having this hearing today about left-wing extremism and violence, literally, as we were being gaveled in, we experienced some left-wing extremism of our own on the second floor of this building while we've been in here. The Center for Popular Democracy invaded our office building this afternoon to push their extreme agenda on everything from climate to the debt ceiling. Approximately a dozen were arrested while we were sitting in this hearing room. Thankfully, my staff brought over pictures to share with you all. This happened right here in the rotunda of the Cannon Building while we were sitting here in this hearing.
Imagine that. Citizens entering the Cannon House office building, been there a lot, and advocated for policy positions that they believe in. But when domestic terrorists attack the Capitol, shit on the floor, steal podiums, laptops, things like that, that's not an insurrection, that's not an invasion, but the Center for Popular Democracy is. Got it, Marge.
Her is so smart.
Having this hearing on left-wing extremism, I mean, you kind of can't even make this up. But George Soros funded it. It's the Open Society that funds this group. Here they are being arrested by Capitol Police. We really appreciate their work. Here they are being loaded into the vans. Thankfully, and here's some of their signs that they left here in the Cannon Building. I don't know if we call that an insurrection, left-wing extremism, violence. I'm not sure what we call.
Well, what we call Marge is sunburned. Girl is scorched. Somebody has been out a tanning. SPF 50 is your friend, Marge. Hope you don't blister a lot.
Call it. But I would like to remind, I'd like to remind everyone that while we're talking about white supremacy, Ms. Spitalnik, you were talking about white supremacy.
It's Spitalnik.
Oh, I apologize. Spitalnik. Ms. Spitalnik, while you were talking about white supremacist and abortion.
Okay, so she's either dumber than shit, well, I mean, come on, or she deliberately called her Spitalnik. Spitalnik? So what about the fetuses, Marge?
I totally agree with you. There's a lot of white supremacists in the abortion movement and abortionists because they have murdered over 20 million black babies in America since Roe versus Wade in 1973.
Yeah, I did mention this toward the end of the program because I noted that sounds like she's been hanging out with the Velveeta King. They're aborting all the black babies! The first and only time marginal trailer queen has ever given a damn about a black baby. Or anyone black. I know. MTG, Steve says, I would love to have the Democrats invite those Capitol Police who arrested those protesters today and describe the differences between these protesters and the insurrectionists. Yes, it might be instructive.
That's on average 900 black babies are aborted. They're ripped apart inside their mother's wombs. So I would agree with you that that could be labeled white supremacy, or we could just label it murder, and it should never be happening. So if you want to talk about white supremacy and the abortion movement, you should really analyze that in your human rights groups that you run as you collect donations from people with your nonprofit, because I think that is something extremely important to talk about, is the right for those black babies to have lives as American citizens, the right for them to be born, the right for them to be given a chance to live as free Americans instead of murder. You think this is funny, Ms. Spitalnik? Is this funny to you? Is babies being murdered in the womb funny to you? Because you're smirking and laughing at me right now.
What's not funny are the black people and Hispanic people and Jewish people and Muslim people who have been murdered in synagogue, in church, in supermarkets, in mosques, by white supremacists.
Are you aware that all colored people are murdered? That is a fact, that every single color person has been murdered. That's not unusual. It's not just that people of color are murdered. White people are murdered too. Murder is not
white lives matter.
Minorities.
Somebody call Kanye.
That may be a shock to you, because you seem to dive deeply into all kinds of misinformation and seem to be uninformed yourself. But if you're going to talk about white supremacy and abortion, you need to study very hard about who the targets are. And it's not just black women, and it's not just black babies, it's Hispanics as well. And I think that's important for you to understand. And if you apparently care about human rights and you care about studying extremism, let's have a little talk about extremism, shall we? I think that's important, because that's what this hearing is all about. I'd like to inform you, or maybe you don't know, maybe you do know, I doubt it. You mostly care about white supremacists and white wing extremism. But there's quite a pattern of left-wing violent protests on college campuses today. Ms. Gaines here was a victim of it. Do you support what they did to Ms. Gaines? These trans terrorists chasing her into a room?
Not the trans terrorists! Oh, God. That grifter Riley Gaines has found her way to Capitol Hill, because she went and spewed a bunch of transphobic fucking hatred, and people gave her hell for it, which she earned. Fuck around, find out. It's a tiny little two-element flowchart. Fuck around, arrow down, find out. And Grifter Gaines found out. Left-wing violence! Yes, because everybody's... Darlene and Steve both. Did she say colored people? Yes, she did. She did not just slip up and say colored people, did she? Darlene asks. Yes, Darlene, she did. As to her little sunburn, Darlene adds, no, hope you don't blister too little, marginal, too little, say it after me, Robin, hope you don't blister too little. Oh my God, Darlene adds, marginal cares about black babies. Now I've heard it all. Well, Marge was born a poor black child, right? The jerk.
Do you support their movement?
I am absolutely sorry that Ms. Gaines felt threatened and unsafe while she was on a college campus, and that's not acceptable. But again, the statistics tell us that when it comes to politically motivated violence, in 2022, every single murder was committed by a right-wing extremist.
Every single murder in America was committed by a right-wing extremist?
Every single politically motivated murder was committed by a right-wing extremist.
Are you sure about that?
I am.
Are you aware that the Tennessee shooter just recently identified as a man and she was a biological woman? Was she a right-wing extremist?
That was 2023, genius.
Well,
General Lady, time has expired. I'll allow the witness to answer the question.
So that was a shooting that happened in 2023. There is no evidence as to what ideology motivated that shooting. And what we do know is that cisgender males are responsible for the vast majority of mass shootings in this country.
I'm sorry, I don't know what a cisgender male is. There's only two genders. It's male and female. That would be that. So no one knows.
Your time's expired, bitch.
It's a made up.
Unfortunately,
yes, made up Latin. The Romans made it up 3,000 years ago. Made up Romans making made up Latin. Oh my God.
Anti-trans invasion.
From Georgia yields back. I recognize Mr. Strong for his 5 minutes of questioning.
And Ms. Spitalnik got the last word. Of course, she was casting pearls before swine. And I mean that in the literal sense. Pearls of wisdom before a human swine. Exhausting. Hey, where you are past the top of the hour. We're into the second hour of the program. We were hoping to get caught up with $450. 150 would finish off up to yesterday, and then there's today. Everything helps. Even if we don't meet the goal, something helps. Everything helps. So please bear that in mind if you can spare some. Don't do yourself any harm. It's hard out there. It's hard for anybody who isn't, you know, JP Got Rocks or GI Love Money. Emilio points out, Marge learned the word rotunda recently. Well, it depends on what you mean by learned. And going back to the city councilman from Cranston, Rhode Island, what the heck, Matt says in San Francisco. It's getting so a city council member can't even speedball in the privacy of his own car. What's a Republican to do? Well, thank God he'd kicked out the rent boy before he decided to celebrate with him. Sorry. Peanut butter and chocolate, peanut butter and jelly. I mean, remember Ralph Shorty from Oklahoma? Trying to have a little sexy time with the underage rent boy? Paying him off in drugs? Because, well, I do. Yeah. Corollary to fuck around and find out, Steve notes, don't want nothing, don't say nothing. This too is true. Rather than I'll possibly mess up and keep going here, and then forget someone's on the stress line because it goes dark so quickly, let's go to the stress line, see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin. This is George from Coarse Gold, California.
Hey, George, how are you?
Doing okay. It's hotter than hell.
Hopefully it'll get that way eventually. I do love warm weather.
Yeah, I know. Hey, you got so many different nicknames for Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I heard you get upset with a caller sometime back when he called her Spuds McKenzie, which I think is perfect, but you seem to get really butthurt about it. Why is that?
I don't know. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to remember the interchange. Okay, tell me why.
Yeah, well, one of your callers said it, and you got said we don't want to talk like that. I guess because it means she's a bitch. Is that the word you don't want to use?
Well, you know, come to think of it, Spuds was a bitch. Spuds was a girl dog. I don't know. Maybe it was just a matter of comparing humans to animals, or I don't know.
Anyway, I hope nobody feels that they have to edit themselves on your show.
No, I don't think people do that. At least,
all right. Well, thanks, Robin.
I've never noticed it, but I appreciate it, George. Now you got my mind kind of turning, and I'm trying to remember the exchange.
It was a long time ago, so it doesn't matter anymore.
Okay.
Anyway, so I don't have much more to contribute, so I'm just going to keep listening. You're doing a great job.
Okay, thank you, George. Have a great evening. Bye. Okay. Anybody want to help me out with that? What was it? Oh, and by the way, Ralph said if somebody does kick in $25, she'll kick in $25. Ralph's is there. Ralph's, thank you, dear. Thank you so much. You're just amazing. So that would get us down to 400 to go, and that would be fantastic. Oh, back to the back to Jubilation T. Cornpone and the Mexican ambassador. Mexico would be eating cat food out in a tent behind an outback. I'm not sure I even know what that means. But Brother Deacon Asa says, apparently Senator Jubilation T. Scumbag has zero clue as to what a breadbasket Mexico is to the world, and particularly to us North Americans. Mexico accounts for somewhere on the order of $450 billion with a B in exports to the USA and Canoodlia, with more than 10% of that being food. Including cans of that fungal-infested corn. It's a kind of a corn smut. I know, it's a word. And I think it probably wouldn't be as nasty as, say, Zerstroming, but the pictures are... Okay. Thanks, Jeremy. And thank you, Christopher. Keeping up with the demands. Christopher says, thank you so much. And that means another $5, and Ralph's will kick in 25 of her own. Thank you. I have always been fascinated with Mexico. And I remember... that quote from, who was it, Porfirio Diaz, who said, poor Mexico, so far from God, so close to the United States. They have been far better neighbors to us than we have to them. And that's another one of those moments where I wonder, you know, I don't know how things are. I see some... Mexican trans girls on some of the Reddits that I frequent and converse on from time to time. I don't know how safe or unsafe it is to be, you know, trans in Mexico. Because, God, I think I was maybe... I have this memory of, like, a warm, sunny... Sunday afternoon, and I think maybe I had to be inside because we were waiting for dinner. I was 5 or 6 years old, and there was some Sunday afternoon programming on, I'm pretty sure it was ABC, about the ancient cultures of Mexico, and I remember vividly seeing the feathered serpent head of Quetzalcoatl on the pyramid at Chichen Itza, and I remember footage of the Chinampas on the last remaining little bit of Lake Texcoco, the floating gardens, and just being absolutely fascinated with it. And all my life I've wanted to go there and see those things, see the Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan, Pyramid of the Sun and Moon. Go to the Mexican Museum in Mexico City. There is a hotel in Mexico City that is actually the building, the physical structure, is one of the last, it may be the last remaining palace or portion of a royal palace in Tenochtitlan. And honestly, by way of, if I'm ever able to, like, finish my surgeries and stuff, I've thought about getting it done in Guadalajara. Because, oddly enough, Guadalajara is one of the world's, and has been for a couple of generations, It's the place where you went if you wanted to disappear and get a brand new face. In fact, John D. MacDonald talked about it in one of his Travis McGee novels. And that thing was published in maybe the 70s, and it was already a well-known thing. And it's a lot cheaper to do it there than in the United States. And the results are stunning. I don't know how that happened, but yeah. Mexico. The disease is spreading. The American disease is metastasizing. Brigitte Macron, the First Lady of France, yesterday spoke publicly and said that her great-nephew was beaten up outside her family's chocolate shop in a politically motivated attack. Jean-Baptiste Trogneux was on his way back home on Monday. He runs the Trogneux, I don't know what to do with the G. Trogneux. Flavio, help me. Chocolate shop is in Amiens, and anti-government protesters came after him. Hit him on the head, arms, legs, and said nasty things about the French president and his family. The victim's father said, "They've crossed the line. I'm flabbergasted." Earlier this year, Brigitte Macron lost a lawsuit that she filed against people who had accused her of having been born a man. She's a cisgender woman. But she lost the case on some sort of French legal technicality. It's like, wow. Yeah, that's the place, Matt. Matt in San Francisco just sent me a photo of the pyramid at Chichen Itza with Matt kneeling at the base of the pyramid. Well done, Matt. Well done. Arms raised in the air. Yeah, stay away from the little squatting guy with the flat back where they leaned you over and, you know, did that al fresco heart surgery. It looks, yeah, I would dearly love that. It would just be wonderful. And I imagine the food is fan-freaking-tastic, and it's not like what we have here. You know, it's weird. I didn't really know that I was going to be talking about this, but just before airtime came, I looked at Annette and said, "You know, I have the weirdest craving sometimes." She said, "What now?" And I said, "I want to go over to the Mexican restaurant and get some refried beans and some Mexican rice and pour queso dip all over it." And she said, "Well, carbs, protein, fats. It's par for the course for a growing girl." And she's probably right. I don't know. I'll have to look there. Let me see. Ralph's. And I love the layout of the Mexico City airport. I'm scrolling through, but I'll have to look and see. If it is, I'm guessing maybe it's... No, that's not it either. I just remember reading about it years ago and thinking, to stay in that hotel. Let's get back to business. By the way, both lines are open if you want to jump in on the stress line or jump in on the Skype line. The new, new-ish, about 3 weeks old now, I think, Skype account is Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. If you want to send me a contract request, you are more than welcome to do so, and it works just fine. And since we're playing clips of Republicans getting punked, how about this one? This came from the hearing on Representative Jared Moskowitz is the Democrat. James Cornpone Comer is the recipient of the needling. They were having that Washington, D.C. hearing, the one that I had the clip of yesterday, where Ana Pavlaguna was screeching about crime in D.C. And Representative Moskowitz decided it was time to try to run Cornpone Comer's blood pressure up a few points.
The data is clear on fentanyl. But you know what else? The data is clear on gun violence. The numbers don't lie. And yet, we're ignoring it. Perhaps we can maybe depoliticize the issue one day like we're doing with fentanyl, because it's important. Watching parents continue to bury their children because they sent them to school, or they sent them to a movie theater, or they went to a grocery store, or they were in a church, or they were in a synagogue, is despicable. And so, look, I know you guys are busy. I know you got stuff going on. You're trying to find, you know, the fake informant that you've now has gone missing. I know you're busy with that. You know, but I'm hoping that perhaps the Oversight Committee, if they're so worried about, you know, federal overreach, perhaps they can start, you know, being focused on real government oversight. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Gentleman yields back. Before I recognize Ms. Boebert, with respect to the missing informant, just so you know, just to clarify, the Grassley whistleblower is alive and well.
Sure he is. And entirely not a product of your imagination. Oh, and just this. You know all that left-wing violence that Marge was carping about? The violent left-wing, yeah, right, a few minutes ago. Jessica Diane Higginbotham was a security contractor for the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, and she wound up getting arrested, and now she's pled guilty. She was hired by the DSCC, but what she did instead was to lay out a plan to bomb the DSCC building in Athens, Clark County in December of last year while the Georgia election campaigns were underway you remember the runoff between Walker, Texas Strangler and Raphael Warnock, right? Yeah. Well, while all that was going on, and I guess while Matt Schlapp was trying to get some from a young male staffer who didn't want to play. Well, Jessica Diane Higginbotham was going to bomb the Democrats. Wonder who she votes for. So she entered a guilty plea that and said that she used a cell phone to willfully threaten to kill or injure people and unlawfully destroy a building with an explosive, according to the Department of Justice. The motivations are unclear, but she told, in the message, she told employees at the DSCC they were on the wrong team and to get ready for explosions. Hello, she wrote. I'm writing this message to you to let you know that I'm coming after, I'm coming by either tonight or in the morning to set a bomb up. So I can blow all the Democrats up. Yeah, her motivations are entirely unclear, Sherlock Holmes. I have other people going to other offices also. If I can't stop you by breaking in and destroying the property, then I'll blow everyone up. So be ready to be blown up. This is going to either happen tonight or in the morning. Hope you like being on the wrong team. So the FBI got on it. And they tracked her phone, because they can do that. And they found her in a coffee shop in Athens the next morning. Prosecutors noted, because this is what makes it a Higginbotham, H-I-G-G-I-N-B-O-T-H-A-M, Higginbotham, yes. Higginhoper? Higginbotham. Hi, Ralphs. Wanted to bomb a debt? Yes. Well, I guess they like to add a little bit of human interest. So the prosecution noted that when she saw the agents approach her in the coffee shop, she vomited. At first, she denied sending the message. She said, yeah, that was me. So get this, threatening to bomb a political office won't get you more than 5 years in the federal stir. Maybe they need to make the sentence a little stiffer. Forgive me for thinking that scene sounds like something out of South Park. Robin, people are having dinner. Quit it. And I have to wonder how this will turn out. With the, you know, we started with the story out of the Supreme Court about the Illinois gun humper lawsuit. Well, Democratic Governor Wes Moore of Maryland signed two gun control bills, and the National Rifle Association said, it'll prevent law-abiding citizens from carrying penis extensions for self-defense purposes. They sued yesterday. And you got to wonder what impact the ruling on the emergency petition will have on this, because I'm sure they'll file an emergency petition too. The National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action, via their executive director, Randy Kozich, I don't know,
said, here are some sad facts. The mere mention of the word Baltimore invokes an immediate vision of violent, unsafe city. That's because of the woeful lack of prosecution of violent criminals in the state. It is vital for law-abiding Marylanders to have an effective means of defending themselves and their loved ones. Our laws should burden criminals and aid good, lawful people.
You know, lawful gun owners. Like the guy who shot up the outlet mall in Allen, Texas, or the kid who shot up the school in Uvalde. He was a law owner until he lawful gun owner until he started pulling the trigger.
It is evident that those in power in Maryland care more for criminals and less for the law-abiding.
The problem is when the law-abiding turn into those criminals, which they seem to do with ever-increasing frequency. NRA scum. Now, back to Guadalajara. Hey, David. One of my daughter's best friends from university is second-generation Mexican. Actually, she would be first-generation USA. And is buying property in Guadalajara area because she has close relatives living there, knows the area, is a native speaker of the language. She can't afford Florida anymore. She landed in Florida right after college. You know, can't afford Florida on so many different levels, right? Her parents were born in Mexico. She was born in the U.S. Clarence. Hey, Clarence, says the DSCC bomber. Robin, that coffee shop is in Athens, Georgia. That is Marginal Trailer Queens District. What a coincidence. Huh. Right-wing domestic terrorism right there in the heart of Marge's. I thought, well, it's probably gerrymandered to the point that it looks like a malaria germ, so Athens and Rome being in the same congressional district. Athens and Rome, Georgia. It's probably not that surprising. Thank you, Clarence. And Christopher, out in Oregon, Grassley's whistleblower. Snuffleupagus? There's a Grassley whistleblower. I tell you, there is. There is, I promise. That guy with Grassley is not a whistleblower. He's the Crypt Keeper's caretaker. You can tell because he always has a scabies peeler handy. Aw, Christopher! There went dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a scabies peeler. Somehow I think I didn't want to know, but now we all do. Well, the dinner ruining is on Christopher this evening, y'all. Well, but then again, I had the puking bomber story, so that's on me. Oh, remember Vivek Ramaswamy, the guy who shortly before CNN canned Don Lemon, blacksplained blackness to Don Lemon, who's black. Well, Dateline, Columbia, South Carolina. This is from last Thursday, via the Associated Press. Vivek Ramaswamy wants to raise the voting age in the United States to 25. Or so he said at a campaign event. Right. So, not sure how he would go about. I guess you'd amend the Constitution. You'd have to repeal. We were talking just yesterday about only one constitutional amendment's ever been repealed. You'd have to repeal the constitutional amendment that grants the vote to 18-year-olds. And I guess in the same fell swoop, you would. There's that noisy water bottle. Darn it, Robin. Highfalutin. Five-year-old water bottle. It's got llama on it. You'd have to repeal the age 18 voting and replace it with age 25, but there are some caveats in here. And, you know, Vivek being a billionaire, I'm sure he loves him some caveat. Robin. Yeah, the caveats are that Americans younger than age 25 could possibly get the right to vote, but they would have to do 6 months of military service at least. How many branches of the military have 6 month enlistments? Oh, maybe they could get the right to vote after they'd been in the military for 6 months on, say, I think the shortest hitch is 2 years, isn't it? Or they could be a first responder. Or if they really, 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 really wanted to vote, they could pass the same citizenship test that's administered to people trying to achieve naturalization as citizens of the United States. How about that? He's calling it civic duty voting. What he's doing is he is ripping off Robert A. Heinlein. For those of you who have read Heinlein's works, I reread some recently. God, the man was a misogynist. I mean, I knew he was libertarian. Ugh. But some of the storytelling was good. But, you know, the funny thing about Heinlein is that he always writes these beautiful, beautiful women characters. And they're always breathtakingly beautiful, and they're always just Mensa smart. But somehow or another, they always manage to wind up behaving. It's like guys. It's almost like his fantasy woman was a guy with... never mind. And so in Starship Troopers and in The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, those two immediately come to mind. He lays out... And The Moon is a Harsh Mistress is a lot better libertarian playbook than Atlas Farted or whatever, Ayn Rand. Say what you want about the Bolsheviks, but at least they figured out a way not to have to deal with her. But it's this libertarian claptrap. And in Starship Troopers, he speaks particularly about how citizens only got the right to vote by serving in the global military. And I guess Vivek's read him some Heinlein, it seems like. And by the way, Vivek is anti-woke. And as creepy as he is, he's actually less creepy than the other anti-wokester. You know, monkey up. I think I've got the audio here. Let's see.
I'm announcing my support for a new amendment to the U.S. Constitution. That amendment would raise the voting age in this country from 18 to 25.
A lot of echo in that room, don't you think? Sounds like there's not a lot of bodies soaking up a lot of sound.
But still tell you that you can vote at 18 if you either do service to this country 6 months in the military or 6 months as a first responder.
I mean, really, that's bullshit, because how are you going to become a viable member of the military in 6 months? or a first responder, for that matter. It takes more than 6 months to become competent at being an EMT. A friend of mine was an EMT and used to tell me that EMT stands for extra man on truck. But it takes more than... God, more dollars than cents, this guy.
Or else, at least, pass the same civics test that we make an immigrant pass to actually become a voting citizen in this country.
Yeah. Wonder why a bunch of crusty old okay boomer Republicans are cheering that idea. Because they know the kids, the American kids are going to grow up, and the Republican Party, as they know it and love it, the cruelty is the point, will go away. But Vivek is bold, and he said, I understand not everyone will like this proposal and that it'll take persuasion to convince many of its merits, but I'm ready to take that on. Well, you do you, boo. Meanwhile, Nimrata Haley is calling for cognitive testing for older politicians. That would be an epic fail for Nitwit Nero, wouldn't it? So, bye-bye 26th Amendment. They really don't care much for essential notions of democracy, and now they're saying it out loud. Hell of a thing, isn't it? God. Oh, and Precious Lindsay. Since I mentioned South Carolina, Precious Lindsay is terribly, terribly upset about the contents of the Durham report. He had to take to his sick bed with a sick headache after he read it, and the only thing that revived him was a margarita and a Xanax, because he's terrible upset. He ran off to that place that used to be known as Twitter, and now it's just a cesspit going to be called X or something. Ay, ay, ay. And Lindsay is a lawyer, an attorney, and so he knows all kinds of law stuff. Finally, my advice to those unfairly maligned by the bogus Crossfire Hurricane investigation would be to hire a good lawyer and sue the hell out of them. Those responsible for Crossfire Hurricane destroyed reputations and lives, all in the name of politics. I hope they'll prove me wrong and come out and make clear that the... You come out first, Lindsay. And make clear that the FBI and DOJ violated the constitutional protections of many, including Donald Trump. But I'm not holding my breath. Pretty sure you hold other things, Lindsay. He went on, what have we learned from the Durham report? That the New York Times and Washington Post were given a Pulitzer Prize for writing a bunch of politically motivated crap? When it comes to reporting on Donald Trump, the mainstream media is dead. Dead, I tell you, dead. D-E-D, dead. I don't think the Xanax was working that day. The funny thing is, the introduction puts the lie to everything Lindsay said. In the introduction to the Durham report, Durham himself says that while, you know, maybe the FBI should have shown better judgment, quote, this is the pull quote from that whole stupid affair, not every injustice or transgression amounts to a criminal offense. And, of course, he's completely at odds with the Office of Inspector General report, which is kind of the exact opposite of what John Durham said. Did I mention this one yesterday? That there was a win in the Supreme Court yesterday? Or day before yesterday, rather? The Supremes rejected two lawsuits. And they were lawsuits filed in September 2020 by the city of Hoboken. Hoboken? Ooh, I'm dying again. The cartoons that live in my head. And the state of Delaware. The city of Hoboken, state of Delaware. Dozens of other municipalities have filed similar suits against companies like BP and Chevron, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, Shell. It's kind of similar to the tobacco litigation because the behavior of the companies, the oil companies, it runs almost parallel to the behavior of the tobacco companies. The tobacco companies, we'll recall, knew for decades, generations even, that what they were making and selling was poisonous, was an active cause of cancer, birth defects, low fetal birth weight, on and on and on. And they knew it because it was their own science that they funded that proved it to them. So they suppressed it. Well, lo and behold, the oil companies did the same damn thing. Their own scientific research showed that they were creating and hastening climate change. And they suppressed it. So, they sued when they got sued by Hoboken and Delaware. Begging the court for leave to move the suit to the federal courts away from state courts, in this case in New Jersey and Delaware, because that's what they like to do. It's much harder to win in federal court. It's a typical dodge. And lo and behold, there was actually a little bit of ethical behavior. The Supreme Court rejected the oil company's attempt to move the cases to federal court. And to quash the lawsuits filed in Hoboken and by the state of Delaware. Said, nope, no. And so the cases will now go forward in those state courts. Among other things, Delaware Attorney General Kathy Jennings responded to the decision, saying, as we stated at the time of filing this case almost 3 years ago, it didn't have to be this way. The fossil fuel industry knew for decades that their products would lead to climate change with potentially severe and even catastrophic consequences. Their words, not ours. but they didn't clean up their practices or warn anyone to minimize the peril they were creating. Instead, they spent decades deliberately and systematically deceiving the nation about what they knew would happen if they carried on with business as usual. And she went on and said, imagine how far along we might be in the transition to a low-carbon economy today if not for their deception. That's why we filed our lawsuit, and today's order moves Delawareans one step closer to the justice and economic relief that we deserved. The Supreme Court actually agreed with the holding from the 3rd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, who said, in their opinion, our federal system trusts state courts to hear most cases, even big important ones that raise federal defenses. Plaintiffs choose which claims to file, in which court, and under which law. Defendants may prefer federal court, but they may not remove their case to federal court unless federal laws let them. Here, they do not. So the Supreme Court said, you're doing this in state court. Shut the up. But here's the wild part, the part where a little bit of ethics broke out. And you know what? I think had this, you know, had the revelations about Fappy Thomas not come out, had the bullshit about the leaked Dobbs decision not made Sammy Bad Breath look like shit, which is not hard to do. Sammy Bad Breath may have stayed on the case, but he has a portfolio chock-a-block full of, yeah, oil company stock. So he didn't participate in the decision, meaning that the decision was reached by 8 justices and not 9. On the other hand, there's the handmaid. One of the party's defendant was, of course, Shell. The handmaid literally owes her existence to Shell. Because her daddy was a lawyer for Shell for her entire childhood. The dinners that went on her table as a kid, her breakfast cereal, the gasoline that took them to church, was all provided via the pay that her daddy earned working for Shell. Think she might have a little bit of a warm and fuzzy spot for Daddy Shell? Apparently not enough to make her recuse herself. But nonetheless, the court did the right thing. Mirabile dictu again. And the funny thing is, no dissents were filed. Not even by the handmaid. Isn't that just a thing? There's more upbeat stuff coming out of the court in today's program than probably anything we've talked about for ages. Of course, me being me, I can't help wondering what kind of screwing is on the way. Well, speaking of a screwing, this story came up Monday. You might recall that Andrew Gillum, who ran against Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, and about whom Ron DeKlantis used the Monkey Up phrase, and Andrew Gillum is a black man. Well, shortly after Andrew Gillum lost by the slimmest of margins, a U.S. attorney in Florida came after him. And Andrew Gillum pled not guilty. And Andrew Gillum forced them, the government, to trial. And Andrew Gillum, the jury deadlocked, hung jury. They acquitted Andrew Gillum of lying to the FBI, but they deadlocked on the raft of fraud and conspiracy, bullshit fraud and conspiracy charges that the government brought against him. And on Monday, with egg all over their faces, federal prosecutors walked into court and moved the court to dismiss all remaining charges against Andrew Gillum. All of them. His lawyer, David O. Marcus of Miami, said Andrew Gillum had the courage to stand up and say, "I'm innocent." And that is finally being recognized. We want to thank the hardworking jury who did their job and explained to the government why it should drop the case. And meanwhile, there was no comment from the U.S. Attorney's Office. They charged him with lying to FBI agents. The jury said, no, he didn't. And the judge had an opportunity to dismiss the case, but Alan Windsor said no. It would have been the smart thing to do. And, of course, Alan Windsor. How about that? Is a former Solicitor General of the state of Florida. Alan Windsor defended the state's ban on same-sex marriage. And Alan Windsor was nominated to sit on the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Florida by, come on, you know the answer, by, that's right, Nitwit Nero. So, a little bit of justice here, a little bit of justice there. And take our wins where we get them. Again, lines are open if you want to engage in any conversation. Yes, Emilio asks, wasn't Lindsey Graham really into hung juries ever since his days as a JAG officer? The more hung, the better. Emilio. I mean, come on. Hung juries, JAG officer. That was quality, Emilio. Thank you for that. And since I mentioned Shell a minute ago, the Clean Air Council has just sued Shell Chemical Appalachia LLC, a wholly owned subsidiary of Shell PLC of the UK. Yeah, because, well, Shell wants to build... This is so gross. Shell wants to build a cracker plant. And that's not an industrial facility that will produce more Senator John Kennedy's. The cracker plant would actually use the frack gas that comes from Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio. And they want to use it, and once they've cracked the gas, they want to use it to make polyethylene. Because we need more plastic. Still got some ocean out there to fill up. So the Clean Air Council suing says that Shell Chemical Appalachia is in violation of both state and federal limits on smog, emission limits, in the operating plan that they have presented to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And, of course, this plant sits on the banks of the Ohio River, so that means it's south of Pittsburgh, about 30 miles south. They started operating in November, and people nearby are not happy. Clean Air Council members, according to the Clean Air Council, are concerned about the impact of the plant's illegal pollution on their health and the health of their families. Well, Shell doesn't give a shit about that. They lied about climate change for years. And the excess smog will, of course, make matters dramatically worse for people with asthma, people with bronchitis. Well, they're not able to shut the damn thing down, but they are asking the federal court to order Shell to come into compliance and hammer Shell with penalties of up to $140,000 a day, dollars, for all their violations. It is at present not operating. They shut them down. Shell shut it down in early April, because they noticed they had a little problem with their flaring system. Flaring system. That's the really tall stack that burns off the excess gas just into the atmosphere. Because they don't really want those gases. So they just burn them. Yeah, and it was almost irresistible to Shell to go there because of all that frack gas. There, you know, another name for Pennsylvania is Fracksylvania. And I know our buddy Arnold in PA and I have had some conversations about Fracksylvania. You know, I hope the Clean Air Council just can protect the ability of those people to breathe. Joseph Minot, executive director of Clean Air Council, said, Shell's persistent lawbreaking must end. The community will not tolerate dangerous pollution events that risk the health of families across Beaver County and beyond. And beyond. Wonder what they're putting in the beautiful river. You know, they say that's what Ohio means. It's the beautiful, the Ohio River. Probably nothing good. I said we wouldn't have any prayer meeting Wednesday stuff, but yes, we are. Oh, dear me. Annette just sent this along to me. PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, who also have been caught over the years running kill vans where they would snatch up dogs and kitties from off the streets and execute them in the van. Nice people. PETA has decided that there is too much violence in the Bible. Well, no, it's not too much violence. I mean, PETA doesn't object to, say, the passage in the Old Testament where all the men are to be killed and all the women are to be killed, but the virgin girls are to be enslaved and given to the priest class for raping. I mean, it's in there, y'all. No, that's not, no. And they're not, PETA is also not beaten up about the torture and murder of a brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life. No, not a, no. What it, PETA has decided that there is too much animal sacrifice in the Bible. So they've used AI technology. I'm not. They've used AI technology to create a Bible with less animal sacrifice. The book, PETA's version of the creation story, a vegan interpretation of the book of Genesis. Wonder how they feel about the whole Cain and Abel thing. Because remember, in that story, it has been seen, the Cain and Abel story has been seen as a fable, a myth, a metaphor about the transition from, not that kind of transition, from hunter-gatherer societies to sedentary farming economies. Because Abel is a hunter-gatherer, and he brings his blood-sacrificed animal and slaughters it on the altar and barbecues it for Jehovah. And Jehovah just loves, apparently, according to Jehovah loves the smell of a good barbecue. And I mean, who doesn't? Well, Cain's taken to farming. And so he brings Jehovah a nice salad. And Jehovah's like, what? I am Almighty God. It's not like I'm on a diet. Give me some more of that barbecue. I also wonder how PETA would treat, say, the whole business about Sky Daddy, telling Abraham to take his only son, Isaac, up on the mountain and build an altar and slit his throat and barbecue Isaac because, well, he's that kind of God. But even as Abraham is laying the blade to Isaac's poor little boy throat, he already lopped off the end of his deck. Even as he's doing that, it was probably a stone knife. Just saying. Stone Age is going to Stone Age. Lo and behold, a ram is found miraculously caught in the bushes. And so God says, I was just kidding. It's just jagging you. Pittsburgh. You don't have to kill the boy. You already lopped his dick off. Well, part of it. Why, just, you know, I'm thinking I want some mutton barbecue. There's a place down in Kentucky, if you like mutton, one of the few places I know of that does a really, really, really kick-ass mutton barbecue. That is yummy. Not the biggest mutton fan in the world. It's kind of gamey. But they do a good, and you know, I think at the same place you can get a really killer bowl of burgoo. Never mind. It's spring, and barbecue isn't, you know, in spring, an old girl's heart fancy turns to thoughts of barbecue. I wonder if PETA thinks that Abraham should have slashed the boy's throat instead. The report says, the digital ebook is cheekily bound, really, in vegan leather and is about 75 pages long. And this first book only covers Genesis. But PETA says they plan to do more. And, of course, the evangelical fundamentalist homosexuals are up in arms. So if for no other reason than making the God-botherers unhappy is worth the effort in that regard. And PETA said, the Bible has long been used to justify all forms of oppression, so we've used ChatGPT to make it clear that a loving God would never endorse exploitation or cruelty to animals. Just imagine the meme with Picard with his forehead and his poor little palm of his hand. Not that I'm in favor of cruelty to animals, but... God. The text will refocus on God's love and grace rather than his thirst for sacrifice and bloodshed. There's only one problem. He's Jehovah. The whole book is sacrifice and bloodshed. He's into it. He's more into sacrifice and bloodshed than Huitzilopochtli of ancient Mexico. Oh, there's our proper Star Trek reference for the night, courtesy of Emilio. Genesis. They've taken Genesis. Who took Genesis? PETA. They task me. Oh, wait. Cowbell for Matt. PETA Bible. Sounds like vegan brownies taste. Oh, that's a rare insult. There's a wonderful subreddit out there called Rare Insults, and I mean, there's some dandies. That's good. Everyone knows Jehovah threw the first brick at Stonewall. See what you've done to me, Matt? Among other new interpretations, in Genesis chapter 22, Abraham travels to the land of Moriah and befriends a gentle lamb to show his reverence and respect for God's creation, rather than slaughtering a ram to demonstrate his faith, much as human sacrifice, once a reality, is now outlawed all over the world, they say. And the word beast has been replaced by beings. And this version, introduces an entirely new character. I almost want to read this now. Abraham and Sarah, remember, Abraham would later go down into Egypt and pimp out his wife. No, no, that's not my wife, Your Pharaohness. That's my sister. She's my sister. Definitely my sister. Fuck her! Because I guess Sarah was a hottie. Yep, there. Randy Radar getting into the spirit of things. Took Saitan from Adam's side? Yeah, Eve was the first trans girl. Started life as a man. No, they adopt a dog. Abraham and Sarah adopt a dog, which they name Herbie. Disney is not going to be pleased. Herbie is the name of a Volkswagen Beetle, damn it. As they walked with Herbie, the passage reads, Sarah and Abraham thought of the importance of adopting dogs from Bronze Age animal shelters. Quit it. As they walked with Herbie, Sarah and Abraham thought of the importance of adopting dogs from shelters and... I'm not laughing at adopting dogs from shelters and rescue organizations. It's noble, it's good, it's the right thing to do. Suspecting that such things existed in, say, 1300 BCE is a little bit... out there. It was probably the Sodom and Gomorrah animal shelter. Rather than purchasing them from breeders. Well, how else are you going to get your daughter married off if you're not swapping your ownership of your daughter to a dude who has a son in exchange for some camels and goats and sheep and bulls and cows and chickens? No pigs. And whoever wrote this over at Universal Life Church was having way too damn much fun. As you might imagine, the interpretation isn't bringing home the bagels for some Christian leaders. Daryl L. Bach, a senior research professor at the Dallas Theological Seminary, said,
You can't rewrite the Bible by this kind of revisionism and then claim it is a biblical sanction. It produces a fraudulent claim of divine sanction, making God in our image.
Well, it's what's been going on all along. This writer notes that not the first time this has happened. Thomas Jefferson created the so-called Jefferson Bible. That's the one, that's the version of the New Testament where he rewrote the Gospels and took out all the magical claptrap. Somehow or another, though, Jefferson didn't get around to editing out all the slavery. Wonder why. Don't you? Uh-oh, I hope I haven't gotten on the wrong side of Tamara. A holy book demanding that fathers sacrifice their sons to a bloodthirsty god, but law, torture of his only begotten son, but law, PETA, never change. Stay gold, pony boy. I get it. It just seems a bit of a reach. They're not reinterpreting the Bible, they're reinterpreting the Bronze Age. Although, to be fair, Bronze Age India probably was already, in many instances, vegetarian. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry, Herbie's pretty funny. Just is. Wow, this has turned into a 2-hour and 23-minute Phil Robster. And we're still $5 short of meeting Ralph's challenge, which will get us down to $400 to go, and only $100 left of yesterday. So, well, hopefully that changes. Oh, God, let's go ahead and do this and get it over with. Outrage du jour. Again with the Picard thing. You remember the quote from Clanny Granny earlier? Jason don't drink beer from a glass. And he damn sure don't drink Bud Light. Remember that? Because they're still butt hurt over Bud Light. Well, now they're butt hurt over something else. You know what it is. Or at least you know the general tenor, right? Kim Petras. You might recall back a ways when the Grammys were held. There was an amazing performance of, oh, what's the name of the song? It's Sam Smith and Kim Petras. Unholy, Unholy. And it's actually a scathing indictment of a guy who cheats on his wife. But, you know, Sam Smith came on stage, appeared on stage in a devil costume. And the religion industry had Rosemary's Baby over it. Well, Kim Petras is a, holy smokes, beautiful. And B, trans. And C, one of the four women on the cover of this year's Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition, which I'm going to try and go and find and buy. Not for prurient interest, but, you know, this is like, this is the equivalent of when Laverne Cox was on the cover of Time. I would never have purchased that. Not back then. Might be a clue. And she is breathtaking. She appears on the cover, standing up to her waist in just crystal, azure, sapphire water. She's wearing a, like, gold lame bikini top. The bottom, the just a tiny hint of her breasts are peeking out from under the bottom of the bikini top because she's got her arms over her head and crossed with them resting on top of her blonde hair. And I guarantee you, transphobes, male and female, across the nation are hate-sturbating furiously over this. So, the rallying cry now is, Sports Illustrated has gone woke just like our beloved Bud Light done did. Some horrible creature named Scarlett Johnson tweeted, the 2023 Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition cover model is a biological man with fake boobs. I really hope men are done with Sports Illustrated. Well, Scarlett, you dipshit, she started hormones when she was 12. She never went through a male puberty. I'm guessing those are the genuine article. She did manage to have her gender confirmation surgery in Germany. She's German. When she was 16, instead of having to wait till 18. Because she convinced the doctors it was in her best interest to do so. And unlike the little grifters, I was conned into transition. No. She is thriving. She's 30 now. And they are losing their tiny little bigoted minds. Some asshole named Mustang Man underscore TX said, and you know, TX can be used as an abbreviation not just for Texas, but for transmission. It's okay, Mustang Man. We see you. You're valid.
How would you like to be a Sports Illustrated supermodel and find out they didn't choose you, but they chose a trans instead?
He capitalizes trans.
They chose a trans instead to be on the cover of the swimsuit edition?
Hate stravating. Dr. Anastasia Maria Lupis. Sure you are. So, the cover model of Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition 2023 is a man! Well, I mean, if it was Anastasia Maria Lupis, would you like that? Fit guy with washboard abs, a six-pack, standing there in a budgie smuggler, a banana hammock maybe? But she's not a man. Not even a little bit. She has probably never in her life had a male endocrinology. And of course, there's been a trans model in the swimsuit edition before, back in 2021, Lena Bloom. Kim Petras, on the other hand, who refuses to be intimidated or daunted by this, said, this is a big dream come true for her. And her major label debut album's coming out June the 23rd. It's called Feed the Beast. Want to hear that? Matt in San Francisco, you have been awarded another cowbell from Scary Jerry. Vegan, like vegan brownies taste. Literally one of the funniest hornies ever. Been home, Jerry says, back on the mainland with a new gastric-based COVID. Ew. Finally feel better 6 days in. Your show's been like a warm blanket. Thanks. Aw. Touches me. Emilio, you're banging on all eight tonight. Men are usually over with Sports Illustrated after about 10 minutes. I don't know that what that means, though. Do I? Do you? I don't. Let me do a little tech support here. Jude was trying to get into the chat room. I don't... see you there, but she said, where do I hit send? Well, you don't. You hit return. Hold on here. Yep, just hit return, and your message will appear. I don't know what it looks like on a mobile device. I'm on the fab machine. Still going strong after all these years. Oh, for God's sakes, Robin. Knock wood. Yeah, so, wow, we've had a lot this evening. Oh, sure, why not? You remember the story we had a month or so ago about the representative who was elected by her district in North Carolina, Stan? As a Democrat? and then shoved them in the ribs in a fit of pique and declared herself to be a Republican. I guess she transitioned the wrong way. Well, she, by doing that, she made it possible for maggots in North Carolina to impose their dastardly will on everyone capable of becoming pregnant in that state. Funnily enough, oddly enough, curiously enough, ironically enough, Trish Cotham, Trish, we'll call her Trish, used to be an outspoken defender of reproductive rights. She's even still listed as a co-sponsor of Democratic legislation to codify Roe v. Wade into law in the state of North Carolina. But, no, she provided the one vote necessary to give the North Carolina legislature a veto-proof majority. Yeah. And yesterday, she used that vote to help the maggots, and she is herself a maggot, let's be clear, to make it possible for the maggots to override Governor Roy Cooper's veto. Up in the House gallery, protesters chanted, "Shame! Shame!" I like it when the old woman in Princess Buttercup's nightmare in The Princess Bride says, "Boo! Boo! Boo!" Or, of course, the line in, what is it, Mean Girls? "Boo, you whore!" It's a 12-week abortion ban, which makes it nearly impossible to receive abortion care. Nearly. So she said, "The bill strikes a reasonable balance on the abortion issue and represents a middle ground." Boo! Boo! And knowing just how damn guilty she is, she said, "Some call me a hypocrite since I voted for this bill. They presume to know my story." Because, see, when she needed an abortion, she got an abortion. And I bet it was after 12 weeks. As I said at the time, I had an ectopic pregnancy that sadly ended in miscarriage, not an elective abortion. In fact, Senate Bill 20 affirms the life-saving care I received in that dire situation. Well, I wasn't quite correct. A county commissioner from Durham County named Nita Alam, who is a progressive, said, "The last line from Trish is basically saying, the bill would have protected me, therefore it's enough. Screw everyone else." Dr. Catherine Ferris, the chief medical officer of Planned Parenthood South Atlantic, that's the Planned Parenthood that helped save my life, she said, "The law is full of medically unnecessary and dangerous restrictions on abortion care that go against medical best practices. Not only do the actions of our lawmakers make me angry, but they also scare me. Treating my patients should not be seen as an act of civil disobedience. A person's health, not politicians, should guide important medical decisions at all stages of pregnancy." And yes, the bill has another one of those odious, godforsaken counseling provisions. Three days before the scheduled procedure, the patient has to have an in-person consultation with a doctor. Then 3 days pass, and then the patient can then have her abortion. As the Washington Post said, the extra in-person visit would make it harder for out-of-state patients to travel to North Carolina, which currently allows abortion until 20 weeks of pregnancy and has become a destination for patients seeking abortions across the South in the wake of the Supreme Court ruling in Dobbs. I don't understand. Why are we so loath to refer to Dobbs instead of saying overturning Roe v. Wade? In the first 2 months after the landmark decision, North Carolina experienced a greater spike in abortions than any other state. So wait a minute. Those pro-life justices in the Supreme Court, our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties, they actually brought on more abortions instead of less. And there's all kinds of bureaucratic horse shit in it. Over at Vox, an article today said it requires intrusive reporting requirements such as mandating that doctors report a patient's fertility history to the state government after an abortion, including information like their number of live pregnancies, and previous abortions. Well, you know, just in case they decide to build a camp and some ovens or something. But they're trading it off. There's some trade-offs in the bill. Yay. The law does include some provision. Again, this from Vox. The law does include some provisions that Republicans say will provide additional support for children and families, including a new paid parental leave policy and increased child care subsidies. But both programs have significant holes, because of course they do. Paid parental leave applies only to state employees, not the private sector. Increasing the state's child care subsidies for families already receiving them would not alleviate the main problem with accessing child care in North Carolina, as there are already, get this, 30,000 born children, non-fetuses, in the state on a wait list for financial assistance. The law does not do anything to get people off that wait list. Well, I mean, when they starve to death, they'll be off the wait list. I mean, come on, let's not be unfair to Republicans. Also not a fan of Trish is Alexis McGill Johnson, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Today's vote will have devastating consequences across North Carolina and for the thousands of patients in the region who've relied on the state as a key access point for abortion. This ban, like all abortion bans, will harm people who have the right to make their own decisions based on what is best for themselves, their lives, their families, and their futures. No one should be forced to travel out of state to access abortion care. No one should be forced to carry a pregnancy they do not want or that is dangerous to their health. And yet today, that is what the North Carolina legislature, via a woman who says that she's fiercely in favor of reproductive rights, is forcing them to do. Today's vote will have devastating consequences across North Carolina and for the thousands of patients in the region who've relied on the state as a key access point for abortion. And then it turns out that Trish, well, her reasons for shivving her constituents, according to a couple of her former staffers, wasn't really about any genuinely held beliefs, political issues, or even money. One of her ex-staffers told a reporter, Susan Rinkinus from Jezebel, "I wish I could say that she took a giant bag of cash at an IHOP and that's why she did this, but it's so much dumber than that. It's just a deeply petty, personal thing." Trish felt like her Democratic colleagues didn't like her. Cotham had also been annoyed that Planned Parenthood didn't endorse her. But then again, she blew off the actual endorsement interview for the group multiple times. But in answering the question, she said she was an unwavering advocate for abortion rights. Nope. Only 40% of North Carolinians support the 12-week ban. Also at Jezebel, Laura Bassett said it's a shame that people who voted for Cotham, thinking reasonably based on her previous speeches that she'd defend abortion rights, were deeply betrayed in the end. I remember answering the Planned Parenthood questionnaire. I answered it fiercely, proudly, gratefully. They need to revisit their pharmacological protocols for male-to-female transition, but the access to care was wonderful, and I will be forever in their debt. Okay, 15 minutes left in the program. Can we, somebody, anybody, the $5 for the Finnish Rauch's challenge? Pretty please? So what happened in Jacksonville last night was a big damn deal. Mentioned that earlier in the program. Donna Deegan is a former TV news anchor. And she beat Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis' hand-picked creep. The creep in question is Daniel Davis, a Republican business leader. She will be the first woman ever. And only the second Democrat in 30 years to win the Jacksonville mayoral race. Donna Deegan is also the founder of the Donna Foundation. That's a nonprofit that offers care, not medical care, but supportive care for families that have been touched by the horror of breast cancer. Daniel Davis outspent her $8.4 million to $2.1. Davis is the CEO of the Jacks Chamber of Commerce. And Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis is probably... Well, you know, if Nitwit Nero throws ketchup, what does... You know what Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis throws. Mayonnaise, baby! Mayonnaise! Would you like some of your own liver with that mayonnaise Monkey Up? But he's all terribly, terribly butch, Monkey Up is. Yeah, yesterday he said he's going to send Florida law enforcement officers to the southern border in Texas. The criminal element in Florida must be feeling pretty good about this. Because Monkey Up is sending literally hundreds of Florida state troopers, police, and National Guardsmen, as well as boats and planes. And they were supposed to leave as early as today. All of this via the Miami Herald. Thank God he's got a pet legislature and a pet judicial system. Of course, Monkey Up said...
While Biden ignores the crisis he created, Florida stands ready to help Texas respond to this crisis.
Yeah, the boats are going to be... Maybe it'll be one of those swampy jet boats or something. Has anybody told him what the Rio Grande is like? Emilio, thank you. The 21st, 22nd, 23rd, 24th, and 25th dollar have come in to meet Ralph's challenge. So we're down to $400. Monkey Up went on and said, this is something that is the responsibility of Joe Biden. Now, you know, he doesn't sound like that. He sounds much more dweeby. whiny, too. Have you noticed his voice is whiny? This is a responsibility. It's not Ted Cruz whiny, but it's whiny. This is a responsibility that he has defaulted on, really, from day one of his presidency. Obviously, if we had a different administration, it'd be a lot easier to actually murder the... No, I mean, deal with the problem at its source. I guess the governor, the nature of the Florida Constitution just makes the governor there like unto a god. Yeah. Yeah, Micah said, she just sent a note and said, well, I'm proud of my old town, Jacksonville. I'm proud of the voters. 8.4 million dollar campaigns don't usually lose to 2.1 million dollar campaigns. Oh, and one more prayer meeting Wednesday item. Just 'cause. There is a new four-part docuseries on FX called The Secrets of Hillsong. If you don't know, you know the prayer meeting Wednesday hymn with wave your donations in the air? We'll charge a fee on every prayer. That's actually, and it's a long time ago now, that's actually an old parody bit from The Chaser, which is a comedy program, or was, I don't know if it's still on or not, from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, the ABC, which, if I understand correctly, is kind of like their PBS. Well, the church that they're sending up in that is Hillsong. And, for instance, a former prime minister... A liberal prime minister. Liberals, you know, it's different hemisphere, so liberal means conservative. Not kidding. Right-wing prime minister of Australia. Member of Hillsong. It was the it church to be a part of. They branded themselves as the cool church. Said they were LGBTQ accepting. Claimed to support Black Lives Matter. Well, their head gospel sharp was a guy named Carl Lentz. He was described as a rock star pastor, and he got the sack back in 2020 over what were euphemistically referred to as breaches of trust and a recent revelation of moral failures. Well, those moral failures had to do with the fact that he had a hard time keeping his trousers up. There were multiple. And, you know, when you use the word multiple, you usually mean, because, you know, we got different words for different things. Pair of, no, that means two. Trio means three. Multiple extramarital affairs, one of which involved a woman who said that being in a sexual relationship with Carl Lentz was abusive. So the four-part series will actually include interviews with Carl Lentz and his family. I wonder if you have to take an anti-emetic before you watch this. Gross. Gross. So, that's it. That's the program. That's this this prayerless meeting Wednesday, or almost prayerless. There's Jude in the chat room. Hey, Jude. Tried to enter the chat room yet. Fun sent. Thank you, Jude. But as life has it, in my ignorance, couldn't locate how to send. All I see is an emoji selection and a paper clip. Oh, my. Well, you just hit enter. I mean, you type your text in, and you hit enter. At least on a PC. So this small amount of funds is for Anatole, who responded when my name presented in the ongoing interchanges. After long days, I'm still concerned if there's substance for me to share. Of course there is, Jude. Be well and love to all. Tonight I send a special hello to Clarence, Todd's kindred spirit. A deep connection for sure. Night. Good night, Jude. Just try typing and then hit on your, if you're on your phone, just try typing and then type your message and then, or just type test. That's what I just did a few minutes ago. Actually, I said check. And then hit done. And so tomorrow, when we start the program, we will be at 690. Thank you, Jude. Thanks to all of our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors this evening. That's Christopher and Emilio and Jude. And thank you, Ralphs, for the challenge. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Roger earlier in the chat room. Thank you so much. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, like and subscribe the podcast, please, wherever you take it. Leave a comment. Helps a lot. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. For God's sakes, wear your mask when you're around the maggots. They're a vector of disease. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain some kind of social distance wherever possible. And, of course, if a clanny granny comes toward you down the sidewalk saying, Jason don't never drink no beer out of no glass, and he don't drink no Bud Light. Well, avoid her like the plague. Because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.